Morning.
Morning.
Today's feast of the Ascension is one that we tend to shy away from a bit. I think a lot of people were unhappy to see it move from Ascension Thursday to Sunday because it made it more prominent. Ascension Thursday, you could go to Mass if you really wanted to. Weren't too many people who believed that you'd really go to hell if you didn't anymore. But you could go to Mass. If there was a sermon, it would be fairly brief. You didn't have to really engage with it. Now that it's on Sunday, it's sort of in your face. And you got to deal with it. And we don't really want to deal with it very much because it's embarrassing. It makes us ask the wrong questions and raises all kinds of other questions for us. It's the sort of thing that can make you challenge your faith. I mean, ever since Luke in Acts painted that word picture of Jesus being lifted up in their sight and a cloud took him, Christian artists of the medieval and Renaissance and Baroque periods have just loved that. And filled churches with pictures of Jesus going up on a cloud, the apostles standing there watching. And we look at that and think, yeah, right. Did he reach escape velocity? If not, is he still in orbit? If he did, what percentage of the speed of light did he reach? Multiply that percentage of the speed of light times the number of years since, and you can calculate which galaxy he'll be in now. Not exactly a helpful approach. So we sort of set the whole thing aside. But this is actually, once you get past it, start asking the right questions, a very important feast. Not just important in the doctrinal sense, but important for me, important for you. Because it tells us what God did for Jesus, which is an important thing to know, and what God will do for you, which is a very important thing to know. The message of the feast is not that Jesus was lifted up on a cloud. That was a very appropriate word picture, at least in its day. Worked up until about 150 years ago, I guess. Even in Newtonian physics, which was a lot more sophisticated than the physics that they knew, as Descartes set out, space and time were this great matrix into which God created. It was there. God created into it. So if you're going to talk about where God is, well, God will be above all of that. So to go up to God is to go up to God. Makes sense. Watch the cloud go up. If it goes up far enough, it reaches God. Since Einstein, quantum mechanics, a whole bunch of other things that only the real experts have a glimmer of understanding, we know that's not true. Space and time are not a matrix into which God creates. Space and time are a part of creation. Literally a part of creation. You can warp space and time. It's been observed. It's been proved. So, God, when God creates, creates space and time. Now that, of course, leads to the very awkward question, well, where was God before creation? Which is, of course, a meaningless question. Because as soon as I say it, I'm saying, where was God before creation? I'm talking in terms of space and time when I just said God is outside of space and time. But it's the only way I can think. It's the only way I can imagine. I can't imagine outside of space and time. But that's what you have to do. Well, you have to at least know it's there, even if you can't imagine it, much less understand it. I can't even read some of the equations that they use in quantum mechanics, much less understand them. And my mind boggles at the thought of quantum tunneling. But I know it works, you know. I know that this is what physicists who are much deeper into this than I will ever be say is pretty well proven. So I have to accept things that I can't quite understand. Well, being outside of space and time is one of them. But if space and time are part of created reality, and God is the one who created reality, then God is outside of space and time. Now, what that means for this feast is that Jesus didn't go up on a cloud to where God was. What Jesus did was to be given life with God, life outside of space and time. This is very different from what Jesus did for the son of the widow of Nain, or for Lazarus, for any of the people that he raised. He brought them back to life. And back is a perfectly appropriate word there. He restored their life as it was before. They went on living and ultimately had to die again. Happens every day in hospitals around the world. We bring people back to life and we go die again. That's not what God did for Jesus. God did not bring Jesus back to life. God took Jesus ahead to life. Ahead to life with God. To a life with God that is, because it is with God, outside of space and time, and therefore unimaginable for me, but it's real. That's what God promises me, what God promises you. Life with God, life outside of space and time. What will heaven be like? Literally, I cannot imagine it, because it will be outside of space and time, and my mind doesn't work that way. So go on imagining it. We'll do it in the prayers. We'll do it in the literature. The only way we can talk. Imagine as wildly as you please. Imagine the most glorious thing that you can imagine heaven to be. And know that it's not that. But it's better than that. I've never quite figured out what it would be for me. Got a good guess from my dad. My dad was a southpaw, sidearm, semi-pro knuckleballer. I saw him throw strikes with his knuckleball when he was almost as old as I am now and had already had 15 strokes. Didn't pop the way it did when he was a kid, but he was still throwing strikes with it. But he never got to find out if he was good enough, because minor league ball was not an option for him. His father had died when he was 6. When he graduated from high school, it was go get a job and start putting food on the family table. But he's a baseball fan all his life, and a good one. He started taking me and my brother to ball games as soon as we were old enough to stand up on the seat and see over the guy in front of us. And we were at a ball game one day in September after the minors are closed, and they bring up the kids for a look-see. And he said, "Now you boys mark my words. That young fellow they brought up at third base from AA is going to make it." That's when Brooks Robinson was AA. He was good. So, what would it be like for him? Pitching in the All-Star game? Being called in for an inning? And striking out Ruth, Gehrig, and fox. But it's not that. Not even for Al Lawrence, it's not that. That would be wonderful for him. Once. What about the next day? And the next. And the next. Besides that, after a while, Ruth, Garrick, and Fox would begin to believe that they were in hell. So it's not that. But it's better than that. Imagine whatever you can imagine. And it's not that because it's unimaginable. It's outside of space and time. But it's better than that. And it's real. And it's what God promises us. So don't try to either stretch your mind in a crazy direction or turn your mind off to believe in Jesus floating up on a cloud. That too is just an imagining. But it's an imagining of something real. That God has shared God's own life with Jesus. And this is the fact. And the promise that results from that fact is that God will share God's own life with you. That's a pretty important thing to know. As Gene Walsh used to say, Jesus makes you two promises. One, your life has value in the eyes of God. Two, you will live forever. If you get a better offer, take it. The Feast of the Ascension is not literal, but it is very, very real. Sisters and brothers, let us pray.